This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, it's coming to the end of the year, and I know that soon all of you will be making resolutions. Perhaps you made resolution last year, and you said you were going to write your book this year. And if you didn't, now you're going to make a new resolution. Well, this year, I hope that you will actually do it. I participated this year in NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month in November, and I did it. And it was not easy because for that event, you have to write 50,000 words in a month. But you have, if you make your resolution on January 1st, that you're going to write a book and perhaps be a guest here on Joy on Paper, you can do it. You have 12 months to do it. But one of the things that you're going to want to do is you want to do a little research. If you've already written your books, that's great, because I have a guest today who's going to help you think about your entire writing process. But if you haven't, then one of the things that I want you to think about is that writing is a business. You have to go into it knowing that. There is that joy of writing, which I talk about all the time, but it is also a business. Just like any business, say you take a franchise business, there are things that you have to do. You have to, of course, have the capability of running that franchise, of knowing whatever that product is. But there are many things that you have to do. And a writer doesn't just have the fun of writing. A writer has to get out there and sell their book. Of course, there are many things you have to do. One of the things is legal. That's right at the beginning. You have to think about protecting your business. In the case of writers, it's protecting your intellectual property. Now, every month I have Bill Larson of Larson & Larson on my program to answer your intellectual property questions, because you need to know that you have to do your copyright correctly. Do not think that you can mail yourself a copy of your novel, put it in an envelope, and mail it registered, and that's a copyright. That is not a copyright. So there are many details about the legal side of writing that you should know, and I hope that you will listen in. I'm on every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 Eastern Time, and learn the right way to handle your intellectual property. But then again, there are other things you have to do. You have to learn about publicity, because you have to be able to advertise. You have to become a good public speaker, because if you have a business, you know that you're going to have to go out there to events. You're going to have to go out and show yourself, maybe at the Chamber of Commerce, breakfast, or wherever. You are going to have to get up there and talk about your business. That is absolutely essential. And many writers, you know, they write their book and they're very happy with it. But then what do they do? How do they promote that book? And many writers, of course, are frightened of public speaking, because writers tend to be shy. They spend all their time, you know, tucked in a corner, writing away and having fun in their heads. And they don't really think of it as fun to go out and talk in front of a group of people. But that's one of the things you have to learn. Now, and as with all businesses, you have to have certain amount of equipment and knowledge. And you have to make an investment in yourself. And again, writers often think that they can just put a book up on Amazon and it's going to sell and they're going to be happy, and then somebody in Hollywood's going to read it and they're going to make a movie out of it and la 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 la. It doesn't happen that way. It takes a lot of promotion and it takes a lot of work. Now, if you are able to, of course, one of the best things is to have a literary agent. Why? You can do it yourself. Denise Grover Swank just hit 2.6 million books, and she did it all herself. She went out there and she sold those books. It's a lot of work. And when it comes to eventually having a deal with Hollywood, believe me, your chances are much bigger if you have a real literary agent. And of course, what you want is a really great literary agent. And that's where it comes down to, you know, thinking about how you're going to find an agent. What you want is you want an agent who is going to find deals. You want an active agent. I know there are lots of books, and people tend to, at the beginning of the year, when they're ready to start looking for an agent, they'll buy one of these ABC alphabetical listing of agents. That's really not the best way to do it. I believe in Publishers Weekly. You go to their page, that their news page that talks about deals, and those are agents that are active. And then you look at the best and most famous agents, and you try to approach them. And certainly one of the best and most important agents in New York City, although not all agents have to be in New York City nowadays, but certainly it is important that they have connections in New York City, is Donald Moss. And in a minute, I'm going to play part of an interview I had with him. The reason I want you to listen to this is because, one, he's a very straight-speaking person, and also, he is a writer himself. He understands the writing process, and he has written a number of really wonderful books. And I hope that you not only will you read his books, but he has in 2019, he's going to be having a workshop at BoucherCon. Now, BoucherCon was here. That's the Mystery Writers of the World convention. It was here in St. Petersburg this year, and next year it's going to be in Dallas. But the wonderful thing about Donald Moss's workshops is they are really hands-on. He is not one of those ones who has a boring PowerPoint and handouts. And he talks to you, and then he makes you write. And he really helps you to hone in your understanding of the writing process. So his workshops are really, they're invaluable. And to go to BoucherCon, where you meet so many, many wonderful writers, is a great experience. And right now, BoucherCon, there are only 100 openings for the Donald Moss event. And it's going to be October 30th of 2019. But you have to really reserve your place well in advance, because with only 100 places, that's not a lot. And it costs just $50. You can go to BoucherCon and register for this workshop. Then you know that you have a spot, because you will really learn so much from it, because he is not only a great literary agent. Ann Perry is one of his clients. But he is also an author of many, many books for writers. And in this interview, I talked to him about some of them. And when I come back later on in the program, I'm going to talk about a number of his different books, the ones that I think will really help you and the ones that you should invest in. Because it's like somebody told me once, working through one of Donald Moss's workbooks is like taking a university course. And so you will really, really enjoy it. So I'm going to go first to this interview, and then later on I'm going to come back and talk to you about some of the individual books and also about his agency and some of the agents that work with him. So, well, I always bring you wonderful guests, but today is really, really special, because I have a guest that every writer dreams about meeting, and someone who really can help you if you are a writer. He has the best advice in the world. Donald Moss is really a literary agent extraordinaire, and his agency, the Donald Moss Literary Agency, is a premier agency in New York City. Where else? It's just such an honor to have you on the program today. Hi, Donald.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, great. Well, you know, it's so wonderful. Writers always know your name. When I talk to writers, if they know one literary agent, it's you. They know your name. I think it's because, of course, your agency is so wonderful, but also because you have written so many great books for writers, and really, I think they've become industry standards. They are amazing, and the one that, well, we're going to talk about all of them maybe today if we have time, but The Breakout Novelist, How to Craft Novels That Stand Out and Sell, and then, of course, the workbook that you give with it. It's just so useful, and it's a fantastic job. You've done a fantastic job.
Well, thank you.
Well, you know, what do you like to be called? Do you like to be called Donald or Don?
I usually go by Don.
Don. Okay, you see, my son, when he was little, he was Danny. Then he got, his teenage years, he decided he was Daniel. And now that he's past 25, he's back to Dan. He says, Dan, I like it. It's not too mature, but it still makes me sound a little bit young. So okay. So, Don, I don't know where to start with you. You are just, I know so many writers who have used your books and who have found them so useful. One writer told me, well, it's like doing a Donald Musk book, one of the workbooks, is like taking a university course. You really, at the end, you're exhausted, but you feel really great.
Well, that last part is good to hear.
As I said, my listeners, so many of them are writers, already published writers, but you have a lot of great advice that, you know, you're not finished just because you're published. There are ways to improve your writing and ways to, you know, jump it up a notch and to really break the barriers that might be holding you down to a certain level.
That's so right, Patsy. The writers that we've worked with in my literary agency who really make it big, who have long careers and a lot of titles behind them, they're the ones who keep learning. It's a craft that you can never, you know, completely master. There's always more to learn in fiction writing. It's like yoga, you know, you never finish, you just keep practicing. More particularly, though, there is more that any writer can dig out of any project that they're working on. I've seen that over and over again. It's what I teach and what I write about. So you're exactly right. It's always about going deeper and getting more out of a particular book.
A writer is always trying to take a reader on an emotional journey. What can a writer do to help that process along? What do they have to think about when they're writing?
Well, it's a big question, and I've written a new book, which came out in January, which very specifically addresses the question you just asked about the emotional journey of readers through a novel. When writers talk about the emotional effect of fiction, they often talk about what characters in the story are going through, as if what characters are experiencing is what the reader will experience. But there's a lot of psychological research that shows that that's actually not true. What's happening really is that readers are on their own emotional journey through a story. We know this when we talk back at the television screen, when we, you know, make notes as we're reading a novel, when we write a Goodreads review or an Amazon review. It's interesting how differently different readers receive a story, what they get out of a story, how they react to a story. And what that tells us is that they're having their own emotional journey. The writer's job, then, is not necessarily to try to get the reader to go on a particular journey with a character, become that character as they read. The author's job is to provoke emotion in the first place, to create an experience, provoke an experience, I guess I should say, for the reader. Now, there are many, many different ways of doing that. But some of the ways that writers think will work don't really have quite as much effect on readers as they think. It's other elements in the story that cause readers to feel, to pause, to wonder, to ponder, to chew on what they're reading, to set the book down for a second and look up at the sky. That's the kind of thing, that's the kind of effect you want a story to have, and how that's produced. It's a big topic. We could talk about it if you want and as much as you want.
With character development, it's so important that to get this element of depth, because I know when I'm reading, that first page, that first chapter is so important that if the writer doesn't grab me.
Correct. Yes, that's well. You just touched on something very, very important for writers to recognize. The first page obviously does an awful lot of work to engage and intrigue a reader in a story. You know, if you don't have that first page grabbing the reader right away, as you say, then you're probably not going to grab them. But the way writers talk about it, it's as if it's the story itself, something about the plot situation that grabs readers and pulls them into the story. And that's true to a certain extent. A nice plot hook is a good thing at the beginning of a story. But there's another thing that needs to happen as well, and that's the emotional hook, that which pulls the reader into the story and connects them to the main character, the character we meet on the first page, in an emotional way. And what we mean by that, though, is that the reader very quickly a reason to care about this character, and that comes from judging that the character is in some way good. Now, that's a very broad term that means a lot of different things, but mostly what it means is that a character is strong in some way, is not just likable, but matters, even to themselves in some way. I know this sounds like a lot of work for a first page to do, but there are ways to signal this is a good person, this is a strong person, this is somebody you can care about, even while the plot situation that you're presenting is also intriguing at the same time. Those are two of the main things that I'm looking for a first page to do. Of course, there's a lot more than that, but you're exactly right, Patsy, that there's a connection that's made with the reader, not just the reader's mind, what they're intrigued about, but in the reader's heart, you know, what they care about, and that's the character that we're meeting.
We always talk to writers about their main character, the protagonist. But I also love a book where it's not just the protagonist and the antagonist. I love a book where it's rich in other characters, in minor characters. You know, if you look at the old Hollywood movies, why they're really great and why you can watch them over and over is they have so many of these little minor characters. It might just be a quick one line from the taxi driver or from the porter in a Pullman car. These little characters on the side that make a movie so rich. I think in modern movies, so much of that is I think they just strip away all the minor characters and don't give them lines because it costs money. You know, every time you give an actor a line, it costs money. And in the old days, they didn't have to pay them extra because they were already on contract. So, well, I've written 12 scripts, and I love to put in the minor characters and give them a line, but I've been told, no, don't have them say anything because, you know, we have to pay when they say something.
Oh, yeah. The pay scale is very different for an extra and what they call an under five in Hollywood.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So,
in a book, fortunately, you don't have to pay those characters anything. So there's plenty of opportunity for an author in a story in developing secondary characters. And what's even better than what you're talking about, to me, is when those characters recur in a story, when characters develop and grow and come back, sometimes in new or surprising ways with different roles in the story. That's another thing I teach in my workshops, and I think it's just great when we've got characters that are not just active on the page, but active in the story as a whole that surprise us by coming back and doing things we don't expect.
I love to have a character come back and learn just a little bit more. It makes the story richer. There are some books that I've read, and there's one book particularly I have in mind. He's not a client of yours, but I read it, and I still have that one character, a very minor character in my mind when I think of his book. And I thought, whoa, he did a good job in that.
Oh, who are you talking about? What book?
That's Doug Brunt in Ghosts of Manhattan. And it's a really minor character. It's the doorman. And I know that's one of the things that you do in your workshops. I've heard from people who just rave about your workshops.
It's interesting what you're saying about characters. And, you know, if we're talking to writers through this program, one thing they can think about is that any minor character in a story is only minor to us, the readers, or to the author, perhaps. The fact is that every human being and every character is very important to themselves. They are their own story. You know, they're the protagonist of their own story, and they have things to do. They have things that they want. They have a whole trajectory. They're engaged in their own character arc, that is, you know, the arc of transformation and change that people, characters, go through. So any, what we would call a minor character, isn't really minor. They're just getting this much pay time or less or more. So any character can become more active in a story and do more work in the story and provide us with a lot more, I don't know, substance in a novel. So minor characters, what I call secondary characters, are sometimes a little bit overlooked and underutilized, and that's particularly true in the middle of books.
You know, there are so many things to talk to you about. One of the chapters that I particularly like in is brewing tension, or tea, you know, how to brew that tension of in a novel.
Mm. Well, it's, for writers, I don't know if readers really notice this happening. I don't think they necessarily do. But for writers, it's a really critical thing to understand. The story operates on several levels at the same time. There's the macro plot, I mean, the big plot events and problems that are occurring, the conflicts that need to be resolved, the things that take us from the beginning to the end of a novel. But there are other levels on which a story is working at the same time, four of them altogether, if you look at it the way I do. The second is the level of a scene where a character is, you know, a smaller moment in a story when a character is engaged in something, trying to get something or learn something or avoid something, and is either successful or not. Each scene's got its own tension. But then there's what's happening as we read line by line on the page, and that's another level of storytelling. It's what I call microtension, and that what that means is that at any given moment on the page, there's a tension there, a tension in the mind of the reader, something that's making the reader uneasy or apprehensive or to raise questions or worries of some kind, small ones, moment by moment, line by line on the page. When that happens, the reader feels that anxiety, that sort of cognitive dissonance in the mind, and to relieve it, there's only one thing that you can do, and that is to read the next thing on the page. Now, when there's a constant stream of low-level tension, sometimes subtextual tension, sometimes overt tension, if that's unending in a story, and we always have to read the next thing on the page, what that creates is the effect where you have to read every word in a book, and those kinds of books we call page turners. I mean, that makes it sound like we're rapidly skimming through a story, but actually it's the reverse. What we're doing is closely reading everything because we have to. It's what I call microtension, and it's a really critical skill for authors to learn. When they get it, when they understand it, they can do anything. They can break any rule. They can make standing still in the desert at high noon with nothing around and nothing moving riveting on the page, if you understand where the tension on the page is really coming from. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, there's a lot of different levels of storytelling that are at work at any given time, and, you know, that's one of the things I'm about, you know, teaching that to people.
You know, they call you the writing guru now, and, yeah, we'll be right back after a quick break. Hold on.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my very special guest today, Donald Moss, who is not just a fantastic literary agent. He is also a writing guru. First, there's The Emotional Craft of Fiction, How to Write the Story Beneath the Surface. And that just came out in January, right, Don?
Correct.
That's a great book. I love that book. And then, of course, the one that came out before that, and that was the writing the breakout novel, How to Craft Novels That Stand Out and Sell, and then it's the workbooks. The workbooks that you do, they are so... It's so good, you know, with 34 examples of things that people have to do.
Well, thank you. I feel that there's an awful lot of craft discussion and craft books out there which talk theoretically about fiction and how it works and, you know, describe what you can do to make more powerful fiction. But I really feel that people learn best by doing. When I teach live workshops, I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, I don't have handouts and things like that. We actually set prompts and have people write on the spot, because it's by writing that people learn writing, you know? Yeah, so when we, I created a workbook to show people how to practically do the things that I'm talking about that make fiction powerful.
It's very effective. Most writers I talk to, absolutely, the idea of doing an outline, it just frightens them. You're a great believer in outlines.
Generally speaking, yes. I mean, there's two different ways that authors work. Some outline a story in advance, sometimes closely, sometimes loosely. Others are what in the industry you hear called pantsers, meaning, you know, flying by the seat of their pants. And they intuit their way through a story, you know, sort of trusting the unconscious storyteller to bring them what they need, and writing a complete draft without much of a roadmap. And I find in practice, either way of approaching the story can work. And one is not better than the other. In fact, they're trade-offs, one to the other, I think. But what really happens, in my observation, is that when people are intuiting their way through a story, what happens is that the first draft, in a sense, becomes the outline. It becomes the raw material from which they will then, you know, shape and develop and grow the story through successive drafts. Outline writers may spend less time redrafting. They may also spend less time improvising and discovering as well. That's the trade-off. So there's no right or wrong way to go about it. People typically love the way they work, and I'm fine with either one. I would say that the pantsing process can tend to be a little longer. There can be a lot more discovery. The outline process is more efficient, and a lot of people who use that way of working, you know, say so and are happy with that. But there's a little less discovery. There's a little less wandering and invention in that method. You can sort of draw a map of your story, but also draw a box around the story, too.
When you get a writer, do you ask them to give you an outline of their book?
Well, once a book is complete, or what the author thinks is complete, you know, it's very,
I know.
So, you're never done, really. Only when your contract says you're done are you done. But in any event, once a book is complete or a manuscript is finished and ready to submit or sent to a publisher or submit to an agent like me, then I think it's not such an intimidating job to boil it down to 2 or 10 pages, you know, to just summarize what you've already written. It's the writing ahead of time that people sometimes find difficult.
And, of course, if you're going to submit a book to Hollywood ever, they want an outline because they don't read the whole book.
No, that's true.
So
it's a skill. It's a skill like pitching that authors really need to learn. It's most writers, it's not their favorite part of the process.
Not at all.
But it is useful. It is useful. There are times in your career when you have to do it. At my agency, we pitch and summarize every day. I mean, that's part of what we do. So it's no particular big deal. It gets easier with practice. The problem is that most authors don't really get to practice that very much. Typically, there's the most pitching and summarizing they'll ever do is of their first book. Once they're published, it tends to get a little easier because other people are doing that for you.
Speaking of your agency, you know, I wanted to mention one particular author, and well, actually two authors. I want to ask you about one of them. I want to talk about Nikki Drayden.
Okay.
You know, it's so funny. I feel like I discovered her. I'm not sure if I discovered her before you discovered her, because what happened is I had been looking, I like sci-fi, and I had been looking for sci-fi short stories to recommend to people, and I came across Nikki. I fell in love with her writing. I thought, whoa, this is, it just blew me away. I thought, so innovative, so clever, and so cute in many ways. And I was so thrilled to find her. And so then I had to go, I read her stories, and then I had to go and find her webpage. And it was the week that she got a deal with you, you know, got picked.
Uh-huh.
And she was,
okay,
of course, putting it on her website, and she's so thrilled. And I was so thrilled. I thought, oh, well, I'm, you know, if I recognized her talent and Donald Moss recognized her talent, we're doing pretty good. I felt pretty good about it.
Well, I'm thrilled that you found her. She's a prolific short story writer.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And, a way out there writer too, stylistically and in terms of her science fictional ideas. What an imagination! She's great, and she's in an interesting case too, because her day job is that she's a systems analyst, and she lives in Austin, Texas. I think it goes to show that anybody with enough imagination, with enough stick-to-itiveness, gosh, I don't know how many short stories she's written by this time. I mean, scores of them. If you want to make it as an author, you can. Any kind of background, any place you lived, no matter what kind of story you want to tell, you can do it. I think Nikki's living proof of that. She's also interesting in another way. At my agency, we've handled a lot of what's called genre fiction over the years, crime fiction, but particularly science fiction and fantasy. It's a field I've been involved with for 40 years. It's a long body of literature going back to Mary Shelley and Frankenstein, frankly. But it's been very much a genre dominated by science, and in the realm of fantasy by, you know, sort of overshadowed by the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But a genre to sustain itself over time, over decades and even centuries, needs to grow and evolve. And one of my missions as an agent has been to find new writers, not only new voices and new ideas, new imaginations in the realm of speculative fiction, but also to find writers of color, writers with different cultural backgrounds, because they can bring something new and fresh to the field. Nikki's one of those, and her first novel, set in South Africa, is particularly exciting to me. I know South Africa. I have an adopted daughter from South Africa. We've been there, and it's a place that kind of lives on the cusp between the traditional Africa and the modern Africa, and really the future of civilization. There's a developing world out there, and it's a developing readership and developing cultures and developing literature. And Nikki's taking us to a really crazy and wonderful future place that blends the old and the new in ways that I really like.
Your website is wonderful, and everybody can go there. And again, it's MossAgency.com.
MossAgency.com.
And
easy to find.
Everybody, well, yeah, but I told somebody that once, and they went looking up MOSS, and I said, no, it's AAMMSSAgency.com. You can see the latest books that Don and his whole group of fantastic agents have come out with, and also the information there about the workshops is there, and a connection to all of your books. And I really do recommend them to all writers, whether you're beginning or whether you've had your books published. You want to go and pick up a Donald Moss book, because it is an education in itself, right?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks so much for joining me. Send me anyone you have. I'm always ready, but I'm always happy. And it's that first chapter. If it gets me, I love to invite the authors on so that we can, you know, talk about what it means to be a writer, which is always a joy on paper.
Well, nice segue. Well, more books. That's a good thing. We'll see if we can get you some.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Don, for joining me. And I'll have you back. And I'm sure you're always writing books, too. So we'll have you back, okay?
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Patsy.
Oh, lovely talking to you. Bye-bye now.
You too. Bye now.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to Don. It was one of my favorite interviews, and I know I'm going to have him back sometime early in 2019, because there is so much to talk to him about. And of course, one of the, as anyone who buys writing books, you know, it's difficult to know which book to buy. That's why I want to recommend two particularly. Writing the Breakout Novel is his book where he talks about the entire process of writing. But the very valuable part of this is his Writing the Breakout Novel Workbook. This is a wonderful workbook, and one that you really, you know, sometimes these types of books can be boring, but not with Donald Moss. Donald Moss really has a clear eye. He knows exactly what literary agents are looking for when they get a query letter and when they look at the writing of you know, that you submit. So I really highly recommend that. And then his other book that, you know, you always have to think about, how do you create a novel that people will want to read? And why are some novels books that you want to read over and over, or books that actually have had an impact on your life? There are different books. You know, everybody has perhaps a few books that have changed their life even. I know I read Jane Austen, and because of that, I wanted to go to England. People, of course, who read To Kill a Mockingbird were very deeply affected, and it has had an impact on their lives forever, their entire idea of race and the problems of you know, all of the problems that are involved in the race relationships and over the years. So, and everyone has a certain book. James Baldwin, for example, had a great deal of impact on me when I was young. So what Donald Moss does in this book, The Emotional Craft of Fiction, is to look at the process, to understand how exactly we develop that connection, and how the writer is able to connect with the reader. And this is what, you know, we're always looking for. We want when we're writing, we want to be able to connect and to be able to understand how this process works. And I know that if you are looking for two books that will really help you to become a better writer, it is The Emotional Craft of Fiction and Writing the Breakout Novel both the book and the workbook, because you will learn a lot. And Donald Moss, his agency is just a fantastic agency, as I said. And when you are out there looking for an agent, I want to again remind you that you have to look at the agency webpage, and you have to submit only to the agents that are interested in the type of work that you are doing. Now, Donald Moss has some really great agents, and some of them are Katie Shea Boutelier. She's looking for young adult upmarket fiction, and she likes coming-of-age fiction. Michael Curry, on the other hand, likes sci-fi and fantasy and near future. Paul Stevens likes horror. And all of this is on the website. Each agent has a profile. And when you are looking to submit to an agency, you can't just submit a blanket query to an agency. You have to select an agent who's interested in your type of work. And don't try to pull any stunt. I mean, if they say, for example, one of the agents is Kiana Nguyen. Now, she says she wants books that relate to lower economic society. She loves dark, twisty books. But she doesn't want any poetry, no crime, no military, and no religion. So you have to take that into account and not waste your time or the agent's time with trying to submit something that they're not interested in. And every agency is the same. They have a profile, and the agents write there what they're interested in and what they're not interested in. For example, another agent at Donald Moss is Caitlin McDonald. She likes middle grade, and she's also interested in diversity. So it is up to you to make this part of your process. As I said, it is a business, and an agency is a business. They want to represent clients that they feel that they can do the best job for. Every agency wants to have a client that has a long career. They don't want really one-off books. They don't want somebody who's going to be unless they are, you know, that shady author or something like that, where it might be a hit and be selling for, you know, 50 years. I guess you think 50 Shade is going to sell for 50 years. I don't know. I hope not. But anyway, they want actually to build authors and to help authors build careers that last 10, 20, 30 years. And so it's important that you have a good relationship with your agency. And it's funny, you know, when I was talking to Donald, we mentioned one author particularly, Nikki Drayden. Now, I just adore Nikki Drayden. I was so happy she was here. She's in Austin, Texas, and she came over here for a convention, and I got to spend some time with her. And she is absolutely delightful. Again, this is an example for all of you. She wrote short stories, many, 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 many short stories. She published them. She, as a matter of fact, she did a little collections so that they wouldn't be expensive. She did little collections of short stories, and they're called Delightfully Twisted Tales, and they are. And there's, four stories in each book, and you can get them on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And it's a good example of what you can do to improve your talent. Remember, writing is a craft, and you have to get better all the time. And Nikki did that. And then, I mean, I want to mention one particular story that this is an example of a story that grabs you. And it's a little short story. It's called Low-Cal Cheesecake. And it's in her collection of Twisted Tales. And I read that story, and I started laughing out loud. I thought it was so delightful. And I, to this day, whenever I see a cheesecake, I think of Nikki Drayden. So she has had a real emotional impact on me, one that will last a lifetime. And that is what you want to do. And so, again, reading Donald Moss's books on writing will really help you to understand that. And I, particularly in the emotional craft of fiction, he gives real life examples from authors like Hemingway and all sorts of famous authors, and explains where they have captured the emotion that brings you back to reading them year after year. Anyway, his agency is, it's Moss Agency, MAASS, MossAgency.com. And go there, and if you have a book in one of these areas that his agents or that he is interested in, my goodness, try it. You don't know. You have to, as you know, you have to have a good query letter, which includes a little bit about the book, and you need a hook, and you tell a little bit about the cook, that's you, and you never know. If you hit an agent at just the right time, that they are looking for the type of book that you have written. So you should try it. Everybody should try it. And I just want to say again, thank you to Donald Moss for giving me so much of his time. He's just a great guy. And again, go to BoucherCon and register for his workshop. His workshops are unlike most workshops. They are hands-on and lots of fun. And all you have to do is pay $50 to reserve your spot. Now, I want to... It's so funny. I've been... of course, first I want to say today is the 74th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge. And my father was there. And I... been thinking a great deal about him because it's now for we've had a little bit of a cold spell in here in the Clearwater, St. Petersburg area, but it is just served to remind me that 74 years ago today, I think, is it 74, 76? I can't remember right now. I think it's, 74. It's 74 years ago. Anyway, my father was there. He never actually talked about it, as most of the guys from that generation did not come home and dwell on what they went through. The only thing I always remember is that my father's feet were frozen during that time there at there near Bess, near in the forest, and it was all of his life he always wanted nice warm socks because it was really something that he remembered. Now he was a wonderful guy. His name is Eldrick Hendrickson. I was very proud of him. He won a Silver Star shortly after D-Day in. But he did not want a promotion. He was a private, and he wanted to stay a private. He didn't want to take any rank. He wanted to be with the guys. And as a matter of fact, he had a saying. He used to always say to us kids when I was young, no danger. And we never understood it. We'd ask him for to go somewhere. He'd say, no danger. We'd ask him for a quarter, and he'd say, no danger. And we never understood why he always say no danger. And I guess it was a habit, because later on we found out that somebody who was in his unit came to visit us and said that we called him No Danger L because he would always walk in front of all the other guys down the roads, the dusty roads, first in after D-Day, and then later on in the frozen roads through the forest there at the Battle of the Bulge. And he'd always turn around. He'd walk in front. He insisted on walking in front. He was the tallest guy, and he looked he walked like Jimmy Stewart, sort of a little bit bent, a little bit, you know, sort of just lolling along. And he'd just turn around, and he'd say, no danger, and the guys would follow behind him. And then he'd continue walking along, and then he'd turn around and say, no danger. and so somehow he created no danger with not, it was, he's funny. He was a funny guy, absolutely wonderful. And I just want to say, you know, I know there are very few survivors of that horror that our soldiers went through. But at this time, we should think about the soldiers that we have today. And they've gone through so much. And I hope that you will all find one of the vet charities, one that you like, whether it's helping build homes or helping with medical care, and support our veterans because, gosh, they have done so much for us. And it is really when you particularly in World War II, when you read about the hardships they went through there at the Battle of the Bulge, it's something that brings tears to your eyes. And at the same time, I want to say something about something happy. I, being from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and a Finlander, I was very happy to hear that a town called Kauniainen in Finland is considered the happiest town in the world. Why? Isn't that wonderful? The happiest town in the world. Well, it turns out one of the reasons is they don't sit around at night watching television. They actually have wonderful, wonderful, it's a town of 9,000 people that has a adult education and children's education center and sports center that's open late through the night, you know, because in Finland, especially during the winter, it's dark at 3:30 in the afternoon. So they keep it open. And the town congregates there. They get there and they do things together. They paint. They play sports. They talk. Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Can you imagine that? And then there are cozy places, lovely couches where they can sit there and read, and then just watch people going by. So it's a really nice to know, and it's something that perhaps a lot of us should consider a really very active town center where we can go and be with people in the evenings, because one of the things that we all need is to spend more time with people. And I was really impressed with that. Now, again, I have some wonderful, I just got two wonderful books today. Andrew Grant, Invisible. This is going to be my read for tonight. And it is wonderful. I know it's going to be wonderful because I love Andrew Grant. And then I got Brad Meltzer's new book, and he's going to be a guest too. And his book is The First Conspiracy, The Secret Plot to Kill George Washington. Woo! I've got an exciting holiday week here. Now, join me Thursday, and I'll talk more about writing and the joy of writing. But meanwhile, remember that it is one of the joys of life is to write. And it's up to you to get busy, and then maybe one day, you know, your book not only will be on sale wherever books are sold, and Audible books, and maybe one day you'll hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a movie or a miniseries, something, you know, they're out there. And I hope that Carol J. Perry's book, Witch City Mysteries, will be on the Hallmark Channel. This is my wish for the new year, because she has absolutely wonderful books. And meanwhile, say Merry Christmas to everybody, and we will just have a wonderful show on Thursday. And I want to thank Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so good to me. And he's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now.